welcome everybody to Health, Wealth, and Divine, also known as Jawanza for Life. My name is Jawanza. It's Friday, and I hope everybody is having a wonderful day today, wherever you are. I am always looking forward to Fridays lately, and if you've been following the show, you know why. We've been doing some powerful, powerful shows with a very, very powerful guest, the comedic Seven Divisions of the Spirit, or the Seven Divisions of the Spirit, is what we've been talking about for the last several Fridays. We're in the midst of a series on the Seven Divisions of the Spirit, and I want to thank everybody for your feedback. It's very clear that you are loving this information, and I am as well, and I feel very, very fortunate to have as my guest someone who's been on the show many, many times. I mean, we've done shows on the 11 Laws of God, his book on names. I mean, we've done shows on the Asante model. We've done shows on the I Ching. I mean, you name it. I mean, we've done shows on it as it relates to comedic spirituality. And again, today's show is no different. We're keeping in that theme, comedic spirituality. And we're going to be talking about, again, the seven divisions of the spirit. If you've been following us, you know that for the last several weeks, we've done the overview of the seven divisions of the spirit. Then we laid the foundation in that show. Then we talked about the other divisions and leading up to this show today. And let me tell you a little bit about my special guest today, in case you're not familiar with Orwa Hehi Metorine Comet. Well, he's been a member of the Osara Set Society since 1975, and he was appointed Orwa, or Paramount King, by Shechem Shechem Ra'unefer Amen, who is the chief priest and king of the Osara Set Society. Well, as Orwa, he's responsible for guiding the lives of Osara Set's members and the society's activities in Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. He's a member of the society's Carry Head Priesthood and headed Osara Set's African Support Project. He holds a bachelor's degree in African American Studies and a master's degree in education, both from Howard University, and has also recently become a doctor. So congratulations to you on that, Brother Orwa. And he's also an author. He's written a fabulous book called African Names, The Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. And it is, without further ado, and a great privilege of mine to be able to share Brother Orwa, Dr. Nkomet, with you. And so, Brother Orwa, welcome back, Dr. Nkomet. It's great to have you back again.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, you know, as I was mentioning to the listeners, we've been doing the series on the seven divisions of the spirit, and we've actually covered the Kab and the Kibet. And this show, we're going to be moving on up to the Ab and the Sahu divisions of the spirit. And this has been a very, very powerful, powerful series, Brother Orwa. I go back and listen to the shows myself and get so much information, and I just want to encourage everybody to listen to the shows again. Don't just listen to the shows once. This information is very, very pure. You know, this information is something, you know, it takes a while to get it sometimes, and sometimes you have to listen to it again and again and sit with the information and for a while, and I encourage everybody to do that. Well, Brother Orwa, again, thank you for being my guest again, taking time out of your schedule. And so, again, we're going to be continuing today's discussion with the Ab and the Sahu divisions of the spirit. And I want to encourage everybody, we laid the foundation, or Orwa laid the foundation for the discussion in previous prior shows. So this is part four. So if you go through the archives, you'll see that you'll start with part one and work your way up, and then you'll catch up to where we are if you're just tuning in for the first time. The overview for the discussion was laid, and the foundation was laid in parts one and two. And so I want you to go back and to listen to those shows and bring yourself up to speed so that you can get the information in its full context and its totality. So, Orwa, again, the floor is yours, my brother. We're talking about the seven divisions of the spirit, and we'll be kicking it off today with the Ab and the Sahu, man.
Okay, very good. The just to put this into context, we're talking about the seven divisions of the spirit. And by divisions of the spirit, we're talking about seven modes of energy matter that we have to operate on as a part of the created manifestation. Or to say it another way, it's God's seven aspects of God's spirit through which we evolve as we move toward reunification with our divine self. So we talked last week about 6 and 7, which are the physical body and the electromagnetic body, or the Cobb and the Kyber by the Kemetic terms. So they're the foundation of the molecular and then the subatomic energy body that through which we work with on Earth. So the fourth divisions of the spirit, the Sahu and the Ev, represent the first parts of what we call the metaphysical part of the spirit. The 6 and 7 are physical, part of the phenomenal plane, but 5 on up is a part of the metaphysical part of the spirit, meaning it's the parts where energy matter, our energy is so subtle that it doesn't take, quote-unquote, physical form. So metaphysical means simply beyond the physical. So the fifth, being that it is closest to the sixth and the seventh, is closely connected with our connection with the world in which we live. So it's a part of the mind, and we can use another term to make these equivalencies and these correspondences. And when we talk about spirit today, is what today is called the mind. So when people talk about the mind was a part of this, what our ancestors called the spirit. So the spirit, the fifth and the fourth divisions of the spirit are the mental, beginnings of the mental part of the spirit. And so when we talk about the mind, the fifth division of the spirit will be the one that's most closely associated with the physical part of being. Hence, it is greatly influenced by the sensations and emotions that dominate the physical part of being, meaning the electromagnetic body, or the sixth division of the spirit, is the part of the spirit through which our senses operate. Right, we talked last week about the ability to sense something, to see, touch, smell, hear, or whatever, is all because we have this electromagnetic body, or this kybit, which energizes the kaw, or the physical body. And once a person dies, the inability to sense, perceive things is because the kybit separates from the physical body and becomes a part of, again, the Earth's energy body. So, but while we're alive, the kybit greatly influences the mind, meaning, and when you look at the lower parts of the mind, which is the sahu part of the mind, we can see that the sahu part of the mind is the part of the mind which, in which we associate things or experience things or make connections with things based on how our senses perceive those things, meaning, the way we, if we, when we're conditioned to like something, quote unquote, to sensually appreciate it, like there are some people who like the smell of dandelion, for example. Well, that sensation is going to influence the mental images that they have as it relates to dandelion. So if I smell a dandelion and I've been conditioned to like the smell of dandelion, it's going to create a mental image within my mind of this flower along with the associated images of enjoyment. And this is critical because this, unfortunately, is how the majority of people in the world choose and make decisions in their life. We avoid things that we, quote, unquote, dislike because we have a negative sensual appreciation or experience with them, which creates a negative mental image of them, so we don't see ourselves enjoying that thing. Hence, we seek to remove ourselves from it, and we seek to engage with things that we do like, creating the same kind of images associated with their mind. So the sahu part of the mind is the part of the mind which dominates most people in the Western world, because the Western world is so predicated on functioning based on the physical world, senses and notions, etc., that most people cannot escape their decisions. They group with people based on people who like the same things we like,
mm-hmm.
look the same way we look, do the same things we do, and we separate from people because these people don't like the same things we like, don't look the same way we do, and don't do the same things we do. So the idea that our senses create our associations and disassociations and create the memories that are stored in the mind to reflect on when we come in contact with those associations and disassociations is what drives the majority of people's decision-making in life.
Mm-hmm.
So people get married on their feelings about someone. And most often, there's something that we like about the person that makes us feel good about that person. Doesn't mean that that's a valuable thing. Doesn't mean it's a correct thing. Doesn't mean it's even a beneficial thing. But it's just that because we're so connected to our emotions and sensations, and these things dominate our images and our mental functionality, that we base our decisions based on these experiences, these sensual and emotional experiences. So what happens is, after a while, one of us begins to change, quote unquote. Meaning, I no longer like the way you do this, or like no longer like the same thing I like, or whatever. Hence, we separate because of our disassociation with the things that we liked or didn't like about ourselves, about our relationship when we came together. So, we say that the fifth division of spirit functions based on external, and that's the summary of how this division of spirit works. We make our decisions based on the external qualities of something, and those qualities are based on the sensual, our sensual and emotional attachment or detachment to and from those things. So, the fifth division of spirit, we have three faculties within that spirit. We have what we call the learning faculty or the memory faculty. That's where our memories are stored. It's the foundation of our learning, because learning is a memorization process, by and large. We also have the faculty of segregativeness, meaning separating things based on external. And we also have the faculty of congregation, meaning uniting things based on external. So the idea of segregation is, you know, what we experience in the United States, for example. A classic example of that would be based on racial phenotype, right?
Mm-hmm.
White folks look different from black folks, who look different from Chinese folks, who look different from Native Americans. And so we all mm-hmm. live in our separate communities based on the segregative faculty. Because I like people who look like me, I may not have an opinion, or I may have a dislike for people who don't like me. So I want to be with people who are like me. That's that segregative and congregative functioning of the sahu part of the spirit. So a classic example of the congregational part of that faculty would be in, for example, the realm of Christianity, right? Unless I've been misinformed, there was only one Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So all the people who claim to be Christians are worshiping the same Christ. But you would be hard-pressed to some Methodists that Catholics are worshiping the same Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You're hard-pressed to convince some Catholics that Pentecostals are worshiping the same Christ. the hard presses. So all these different congregations are examples of the segregativeness and the congregativeness faculties of the Sahu part of the spirit, because even though they are all supposed to be identifying with the same divine being, Christ, they all have different external expressions, different external expressions of that identity, of that identification. So Catholics will want to do the Christ thing their way. Pentecostals are going to do the Christ thing. There's a different way that Luther is going to do the Christ thing. There's different than some way Methodists want to do the Christ thing. So the externals, how these things emotionally and sensually appeal to us, and the memories that we form based on these emotional and sensual experiences shape how Sahu man functions in the world. He's always looking at things from the external. He's always looking to group with things based on their external qualities and separate from things based on their external qualities. So that's the Sahu part of the spirit. Now, the Sahu part of the spirit is also a part of the spirit which we talk about its connection to the emotion and sensual part of the spirit, which is the sixth division, because the Sahu represents receptivity to the sixth division, or to emotion. So the greatest amount of, that's why the moon is a symbol for the Sahu part of the spirit. The moon is that planetary body which doesn't have any light of its own. It doesn't see things. It doesn't show light, rather. But it's reflective. I mean, you only see the moon, part of the moon which is reflecting another source of light. So it imitates the light of the sun. So Sahu man is a great imitator. So the Sahu part of the spirit then represents the earliest of youth, from 7 to 14 to 28, meaning that it's in those parts of the development of a person that they begin to have these experiences which they remember and form as the basis of their associations and disassociations that enable them then to to formulate based on imitation, indiscriminate imitation. So a child will do and say what they do simply because they are indiscriminately imitating what they've seen others say and do what they do. So then that's the same concept of functioning associations based on externals is basically an indiscriminate way of functioning. There's no consideration for the value of something or the truthfulness of something. It's merely a thing of, do I believe that this thing is in sync with what I believe? Hence, the problem with the Sahu man and systems, belief systems, is that it's not based on truth or knowledge. By definition, if I say I believe something, I'm saying I don't know.
Correct.
So that gives us the fifth division of the spirit. Now, the fifth division of the spirit is also through the lower parts of the mind. And we won't, when I say the mind, I'm talking about the brain. It's the lower part of the mind. I'm talking about a connection with the brain. So we have the animal parts of the brain that represent the reptilian and mammalian. I think we kind of discussed this in a previous discussion. There, as the divine consciousness is evolving through its creation, it experiences the world based on these vehicles, or the nature of the vehicles, or the structure of the vehicle, through which that experience is taking place. So as consciousness was evolving through the mineral kingdom, through the plant kingdom, to the animal kingdom, it experienced the world through the structures of those vehicles. Now, humans, evolutionary step of this divine consciousness. So the memories and learning that took place in the plant, mineral, and animal kingdom, mineral kingdom, and animal kingdoms, are all a part of our backdrop of memory experiences. So we too have an animal part of our brain. We've had the reptilian brain. We have the mammalian brain. So those parts of the brain are the parts of the brain which enable or stimulate this kind of behavior that we're talking about here. Because the reptiles and animals and mammals are the creatures, those parts of the brain that function through these sensual and emotional discussions and behavior. You know, in spite of what you've been told, lions are not lying down with lambs.
True. It's true.
Lions
gotta eat. And we know which
lions,
one that is.
Yeah. Lions have to eat. And lions have to eat lamb. You know, lamb is good food for lions. So, and based on that concept of the mind and the evolutionary part of the mind, as man evolved toward his divinity, he reunited the divinity, he learns the lessons of these other kingdoms. And now in the human experience, he has now to, this is a part of the experience where he must disassociate from the influences of the lower parts of the mind, that's the sahu part of the mind, and the kind of it part of the spirit, and begin now to awaken and utilize the fourth division of the spirit, which is called the ebb. Now, with the sahu, man looks at things from the perspective of external and evaluates things based on the external qualities. And now these qualities experience are conditioned through the senses. In the ebb part of the spirit is where man begins to disassociate from the identification with the lower parts of the spirit, the animal influences, the emotional influences, etc., and now begins to challenge those connections, those decisions. Whereas the sahu part of the spirit, I'm basing my decisions based on how things appear to me externally. When I begin to utilize the ebb part of my spirit, now I'm basing my decisions on the qualities of the things themselves, the value of the things themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm beginning to look for the truth engaged in the thing themselves and how this thing part of the whole expression and evolution toward awakening my divinity. So it's a different level of experience. I look at the same things, but I look at them differently. A classic example of this would be, as a sahu person, if you give me an orange, some garlic, some mustard green, I'm going to separate these things because they don't look alike. I'm going to put the mustard greens in with the collard. I'm going to put the orange in with the peaches. And I'm going to put the garlic in with some other vegetable or fruit. What else is right? Maybe a parsnip or something. I don't know.
Okay. Another spice.
Because I'm looking at external how things appear to my senses. The mustard greens and the collard are both green leafy vegetables. So they go together. The orange and the peach are both, you know, have that same kind of color, and they're both fruit, so they go together. And the parsnip and the garlic are both white, or maybe a mushroom, are both white and vegetative. So that I would put them together. But when I start looking at things from the qualities that these things possess, the values that these things possess, then I will make some different associations. For example, the orange and the mustard green and the garlic all have a warming effect in the body. They're all what we call hot hot temperament food.
Okay.
So based on that, because they have a functional quality of warmth, they go together. Whereas the collard, the mushroom, the peach, all have a cooling effect on the body. They're all basically the temperament is a cold temperament. So because they have that same quality, then I would put those together. So even though they might look similar, the orange and the peach have opposite effects when you take them into the body. So I'm looking at the value of something or the quality of something, expression, as opposed to the external image of that thing, and makes my decision. Now, this is going to naturally lead me into some conflict, because all my life up until the 28, which we say is the age of children, and is spiritually looked upon as the age of children, because the moon, as we said, represents the period of youth in development. And the moon has a 28-year cycle before it returns to the exact position in a person's, where it was when a person was born. So we say the moon governs the child. And up until the 28th, a person is functioning through the lunar qualities, which are indiscriminate imitation, reflection, et cetera, based on what they see. Determination is based on external quality, external appearance of things, how these things appear sensually and emotionally. Around the age of 28 begins the period when, 20 to 35 begins the period when the sun begins to control or be the dominant planetary figure in a person's growth. And the sun is characteristic of shedding light, showing light, seeing. Meaning the moon operates in darkness, so I feel my way around. The sun brings light, so now I can see. So I can see the relationship, the proper relationship between things. With the moon, I'm feeling that this, you know, people say, I feel you. Well, that's nice. But you, I might be wrong. So if I'm wrong and you're feeling me, then you're wrong. But if I can see, see what's going on, then I can distinguish this. You know, if you're wrong, I can see that clearly, because I now have a light to illuminate the experience that I'm having. And that's what the fourth division of the spirit brings, the ebb. Now, the ebb is called, ebb means heart, symbol for, you know, that which we are attached to or attracted to. So when my heart is in something, I'm drawn to it, or I'm motivated to deal with it, right? Or the heart is a symbol, quote unquote, of love. Well, that love, again, as we discussed a few minutes ago, is based on external quality. I like the way that person looks. I like the way they sound. They remind me of so-and-so. These are all external qualities. We both like to play poker. I mean, these are the kind of things that bring people together. We both don't like, you know, bees or whatever. I mean, people come together based on all kinds of nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the heart that's being guided by the moon. That's a heart that's the light has been shunned off. The light has been cut from the heart. So, in the air part of the spirit, the sun begins to shine. Our light begins to shine, which allows me to see how my heart is functioning, and therefore to steal it or stabilize it when it's moving in the wrong way. When my heart is being controlled by the lower part of the spirit, the sahu part of the spirit, I can now stabilize that movement because I see that it's incorrect. Classic example of this is when I have an addiction. And a classic example of that would be smoking a cigarette, right?
Mm-hmm.
People smoke cigarettes because they become conditioned to the habit of smoking a cigarette. They become addicted to nicotine or whatever. You know, I used to smoke when I was young. I started smoking because I was indiscriminately imitating my father. You know, my father, when I was a young man, when I was a child, used to smoke, what was that cigarette? Camel.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And so, but I couldn't wait till I was 16 so I could smoke, right? So by the time I turned 16, I started smoking Camel. Now, at this point, my father had already switched to Viceroy's, but I had sown that seed. In this communication, I was going to smoke Camels, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how people make decisions in their life, based on what they see around them. So, you know, once you have the habit of, once you develop the habit of smoking, then there are certain things that just automatically kick in. When you eat, after you eat, you got to smoke, right? It's just a habit. It's just a conditioning that you build in. So at the point when you say, I'm not going to smoke anymore, when you begin to exercise your will, because the fourth division of the spirit is where the will resides, and we have a free will, which is what the heart symbolizes, the free will, meaning I can make a choice now. Once you decide I'm not going to smoke anymore, not because of any emotional reason, I'm feeling pain or so-and-so doesn't like me more, therefore I'm going to stop. Once I see that smoking is wrong, based on whatever factors I'm making my decision, I have the choice. I begin to exercise my choice to not to smoke. But just because I decide I'm not going to smoke anymore doesn't mean that my body is in the same line with that. The animal is conditioned to have its cigarette. I mean, when an animal has a habit, the animal is going to exercise based on that habit. So when you say, I'm not going to smoke anymore, you say, okay, that's a sign. But the animal that you've been feeding the cigarette to all the time is saying, I need to have a cigarette.
Right.
So the next thing you know, your mind is telling you, your ebb is telling you, the fourth division of spirit is telling you that smoking is bad for my health, is bad because it interferes with my community building and whatever. It promotes negative images in the world. You know, smoking, a lot of tobacco products were part of the slave trade for my ancestors, were enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once you begin to see really all the stuff that's involved in this image, and you make a decision, I'm not going to participate in this anymore, then you have a problem with your animal, because the animal is now accustomed to having the cigarette. So the air part of the spirit is saying, I'm not smoking anymore.
And the animal part is saying, it's the last one. What's more, this is the last pack.
Yeah. And the next thing you know, 10 years later, you're still trying to get to the last one. Until you exert the to exercise your will, meaning until you establish your will as saying that it's a choice that you're making. And you can only do that when you give up the battle. You have to defeat the animal. You have to tame the animal. You know, the concept of animal tamers, trainers, is valuable because we have this zoo within us, these animals within us that are raging around doing what they do. And if we're going to evolve and become the divine beings that we're destined to be, we have to become animal tamers. I suggest everyone watch that show, The Dog Whisperer, because it is a very good show on how to handle that animal within. Right? Calm, submissive. You have to be calm, submissive, meaning the air part of the spirit is associated with ma'at, which is the law.
Mm-hmm.
And the law is imaged by a feather. And a feather is weightless, meaning if I'm going to choose to do something based because I know it's the right thing, ma'at, the choice is not going to come with energy behind it. Energy is what's going to come from the animal parts of the spirit. Feed me, Seymour, feed me.
Mm-hmm.
The will, which is free, which is power, is powerless. It makes a decision, and then we have to follow, we have to all adhere to that decision because it's the right thing to do, because it's true. And once we do that, then the animal begins to get under control. And there's all kinds of symbolism within the Kemetic system to show this metaphor. For example, Tuti, who's the god of wisdom and truth, keeps doll in part ape, alligator, I think it is actually, both of which are part of Sebek, or parts of the Sahu, part of the spirit. He keeps it on a leash, which is to show us that wisdom has to control information. Sebek is information. Sebek, information is based on belief. Right? There's all kinds of information out here. It's like going to the internet to find your sources. Until you can discern what's truth and what's falsehood, you can end up with any kind of stuff. There's all kinds of beliefs floating around on the internet. So I have to identify what's true, mark that feather, and I have to then go to battle against the animal within me to subdue it. And this whole thing is metaphorized in the story of Heru in the Kemetic system, Kemetic scriptures. You know, Osir, which is the symbol for the divine self, which would be the first division of the spirit. We'll get to that when we get there, but just for the sake of this discussion here, Heru, Alset, is the symbol, is the mother, is the symbol of the ninth sphere, or the part of Sahu, part of the spirit, and Heru is the union between the two. That's the sun, which is a symbol for the fourth division of the spirit, and again, the will is free. Now, Set is the symbol, is the brother of Osir and Oset, but he's also the uncle of Heru, but he's also the symbol for the evil, quote unquote, the infam. When I say evil, we're talking about the expression of sensualism and emotionalism, which is not directed and guided by truth, right? So evil is a relative term. There's no such thing as evil in the world. There's a relationship between what's correct and what's incorrect. If I know that this is incorrect and I participate in it, then I'm practicing evil. But the thing itself is evil. It's a reflection of where I am in terms of my spiritual awareness. You know, lions kill. You know, they viciously slaughter lambs and antelopes, etc. Now, that's not evil. That's the expression of where they are in terms of the nature of their being. So, Set represents the man or woman who is allowing their emotions and sensations to control how they function, and therefore denying that truth. There's a concept called truth. There's a concept called righteousness. That there's a correct thing, correct way of functioning to exist. So, Set then becomes he kills his father. I mean his brother Osir, Heru's father, just chops him up in all these pieces. And Osir then is the concept of reunification, of reuniting, remembering the wholeness. So Osir then immaculately conceives Heru, the child, who comes into the world with the charge of reclaiming his father's kingdom. For all those who saw The Lion King, it's a direct plagiarization of the Osir story. But that's another session. And so, Heru then comes into the world to reclaim his father's kingdom. His mother, Osir, is trying to raise him, nurture him, so that he can become the ruler of the world. But Set, who has taken over the world, is not going to give it up without a fight. So Set represents those emotional, essential conditioning that we have. That's that conditioning toward smoking that we have. That's that animal that says, give me the cigarette. That's set. Heru, as a child, tries to defeat set at his own game, right? Meaning he tries to use emotionalism and sensualism to correct the wrongs that emotionalism and sensualism have created. Hence, if I'm trying to overcome my smoking and my habit is the representative of set, then young Heru wants to defeat the smoking, but he uses emotionalism to try to defeat it. Oh, I'm afraid of dying, so now I'm going to stop smoking. Well, by using the emotion of fear to counteract the emotion of conditioning, lust or whatever it is that has run toward a cigarette, you're still functioning on the emotional level. So that's not going to, you may be able to change your substituting one master for another, in other words. So at some point, Heru, to listen to his mother, who tells him to go speak to Tehuti, the wise one, the speaker of wise words, the communicator of truth, etc. And Tehuti then heals the wound that Heru had. Heru's eye was damaged by Set. Eye being symbolic of the ability to see, right? So if I damage your eye, then you can't see. You got to feel your way. You're functioning on my level. It's an analogy of trying to beat someone at their own game, right? If I'm the master of something and I teach you everything you know about that thing, you're not going to beat me at it. The best you can hope for is a cellmate. But if we have a cellmate, I'm still a champ because it goes to the champion. Whoever has the belt, when there's a tie, when there's a draw, he retains the belt. Set damages Heru's eye. Heru cannot see now. So he's functioning in this feeling, sensual arena that Set controls. So they go back and forth. Some days Heru wins, some days Set wins, back and forth. Eventually, you know, hard head makes a soft behind, as my mama used to say. And Set was the first mama to utter that phrase. So Heru finally takes her advice and goes sees Tehuti. Tehuti heals Heru's eye. So now he can see that he's not going to defeat Set at his own game. If you're going to defeat emotions and sensualism, you have to take it one level up. You have to deny them influence into your functionality, which he does. So he stabilizes the heart. The heart, again, being the symbol for what I'm attracted to or whatever. So if I'm attracted to that cigarette, there's an emotional pull to that cigarette. There's a drive, there's something moving in that cigarette. What I have to do is stabilize the heart, to still the heart, to put the heart on freeze down so that I can now choose to follow the right thing, the voice of wisdom, that's the truth, which is what my art represents. So our ability to evolve from dominance of the Sahu part of the spirit into a part of the next level of the spirit, the empire spirit, is where we also begin to make the transition from animal, human, toward the divine. Because when we move from the fourth division to the third division, now we're no longer functioning with the animal and the human influences, but now we're moving into the realm of the divine abilities, divine capabilities, divine parts of the spirit, parts of the vehicle through which we can experience and express our divinity. But it doesn't go without a fight. And that's what the fourth division of the spirit represents, the transitional zone. It's where I need to cut. It's the old saying, when I was a child, I functioned as a child, now I'm a man, I put away childish things. Well, unfortunately, in most people, even though they've physically, physiologically become adults, they don't put away the childish things. The childish things is being dominated by lack of control with emotions and sensualism. You know, for example, I hate to use this example, but it's out there for everyone to see. The first President Bush, you know, there was a big controversy during his reign because he made a comment that he didn't like broccoli. I don't know if you're old enough to remember that, but all the people, there was a whole broccoli truck blockade that circled D.C. for a couple of days because the man put out that he didn't like broccoli. So the truck drivers were coming from all over, filled the truck with broccoli, circling D.C. An embargo. But he didn't like broccoli. Why? Because he, as a child, was conditioned to not like broccoli. Now, if he had evolved into the empire of his spirit, he would see that he was seen, being able to see that he may not like the texture of broccoli, but he may not like the taste of broccoli, or he may not like the look of broccoli, or whatever sensual, ill behavior he had toward broccoli, he would be able to see the true value of broccoli. And the true quality of the broccoli, and then consume it based on that sight. So now he sees, and therefore he knows the value, as opposed to believing that there's something wrong with broccoli just because he was conditioned one way or another to dislike it. So that's what the ebb represents, and it's a transitional phase from dominance of the human and animal parts of the spirit toward awakening, the divine parts of the spirit. And the only way we can awaken the divine part of the spirit is by identifying with that feather, ma'at. Meaning, before you can, I think we gave an example a couple discussions back, where we're talking about if someone had the, at this point, if everyone on earth had the power of of God functional within them, if a part is latent within it, the vehicle is there, we just don't have the keys, we haven't learned how to use it yet. If everyone had that ability right now, without anything else, all things being equal, the world would be destroyed within 3 seconds because everyone dislikes something, and people would be disliking. And by the time you got rid of all the roaches and I got rid of all the bees and everybody finally got to get rid of all this, they start getting rid of everybody else, you know. So whoever has whoever would be the last man standing for sure on a barren earth because everything will be gone.
Right.
So before that part of the spirit is awakened, turned on, before you get the keys to drive around in that part of the spirit, you have to become as harmless as a dove, meaning you have to have the weight of the feather as your heart balance. And so there's a spiritual exercise that a person goes through to determine if they are in fact worthy of awakening or getting the keys to the divine plan of spirit. And so their heart must be weighed against the feather, meaning their heart must be as light as the feather, meaning if the heart is moved by external, likes, dislikes, emotions, passions, whatever, then it gives weight to the heart. But when the heart has evolved to a person where a person steals the heart, doesn't allow those emotions and sensations to control their behavior, that leavens the heart. So now it can become as light as a feather, meaning what I put my heart into is what's true, as opposed to what I feel, what I sense or believe. So if it's true, then it's going to be light. You know, truth is always light. But emotions and beliefs are always heavy because the heart becomes heavy with them. So within this spiritual system of Elijah Kamet, you know, the final test before a person is able to ascend into the divine part of the spirit is this ma'at test, this feather test. If I can show that my heart is as light as a feather, means that the animal no longer has any dictates within me. The human no longer has any dictates within me. And now I'm as harmless as a dove, hence I can have access to and utilize the divine power of creation through the will.
Well, you know, Orwa, I know that there are people that have listened to the show thus far, and just the way that you laid it out, I mean, just very, very clear. I know that there are people out there that want to know, well, okay, I want to go into those to the higher realms, you know. I'm dealing with some of the stuff that, you know, the brother was talking about, you know what I mean? And I want to, you know, go higher into the higher realms and the higher divisions of the spirit. Could you talk about briefly the role that initiation plays in this whole process of becoming the, you know, going from the Sahu man to the Ab man and from the Ab man higher? What role does initiation play in this whole process?
Well, initiation is the process through which that transformation can take, meaning there's a concept or debate within academia, I guess it probably is, whether growth is a result of nature or nurture, right? And the reality is it's both. So, but the fact is, if you don't come through a nurturing environment, which, let me rephrase it, an environment which nurtures the understanding that I'm not an animal by nature, or I'm not a human by nature, then how can I express anything beyond that? If all I'm taught is you are a human, you are an animal, or something in between those two, then how can I evolve beyond the influences of the human and the animal parts of my being? Well, I can't, because I haven't been taught anything else. So the only way we can move beyond those levels of functioning is by receiving teachings that will guide us to the understanding and the expression of behaviors and experience beyond the human and the animal experience. Or otherwise said, the only way we can tap into our divinity, the only way we can become a God man or a God woman, the only way we can link into our divine self-image is by being taught how and what that looks like. What does God look like if God is a divine being? We know what humans look like because we've been taught that. We see it every day. If we want to become something beyond that, then we have to have a guide, because we're not going to get it through our CNN. We're not going to get it through Fox News. We're not going to get it through MSNBC. We're only going to get the expressions of humanity through those channels and animal behaviors through those channels. If we want to evolve beyond that, then we have to have a level of lessons that takes us to another level of discussion, another level of experience. And that's what initiation is. So that role that we talked about a minute ago in terms of weighing the heart, and the heart becomes as light as a feather. In the ancient Kemet, that wasn't just something that was done at the end of a person's life, that was something that was done every night, meaning each and every day in my life, I'm going to be challenged by the animal and the human within me. The animal and the human parts of my being are going to challenge me. They're going to want to control my decisions and the things that I do. And each and every day of my life, I have an opportunity to express my divinity, to steal those passions, steal those behaviors, to see what I should do and to function through that knowledge of what's correct, to what's true, each and every day of my life. But if I don't do it, then I have to, each night I have to go through this weighing of the heart scene to determine if I have stilled the heart, or if I've allowed the heart, the passions that drive the heart, to control my behavior. And once I can do this to the point where each night I can say, not have I committed this emotional or sensual act, then I have set myself up to become one with those hundreds of and perhaps thousands of people in the ancient world, ancient Kemet, and other parts of Africa as well, who overcame sin, became a divine being, a God man or a God woman. And the heart, controlling the heart, is key to that process. And it's not just, I said, in ancient Kemet, but we find the same concept in amongst the Akan in Ghana. They have this concept, the heart is called the coma. And they have the same concept of you have to control the emotional expressions of the heart. And by so doing, once a person can do that, then one links themselves with the divine Kra, which is that representative of the supreme being within man. We find the same thing amongst the Zulu in South Africa. So there's a concept, there's an understanding that there's these different parts of the spirit. We're able to evolve from one to the other based on how we control the lower parts of the spirit, which are dominated by the animal influences and the human influences. And once I can confirm within my own spirit that not have I allowed the animal to dictate my behavior, not have I allowed the human to dictate my behavior, then I can assume my position as a divine being, or begin to assume the learning that takes place in becoming a divine being. Because there's more learning that takes place on that level as well. You just don't move from evolve beyond the fourth division of the spirit to the third division of the spirit, and now it's all over and done with. No, and still, each division of the spirit, again, is a vehicle. And you have to learn how to handle a vehicle to effectively get the most out of it. So the part of the vehicle that the fourth division represents is the vehicle through which I'm able to see. I begin to see what's the value of something, the true value of something, and I then base my decision and my action on what I see, as opposed to what I feel or what I believe.
You know, Brother Owa, again, this show is so powerful, and during the next one, we can talk about just even the reason for the experiences that, you know, have to be met with peace. You know, I know the law of affairs states that nothing and no one in the world can be against you, but all experiences come to you for your reclamation of peace, that you may acquire wisdom and power. You know, if people understood that this was the very reason why these, quote, challenges / opportunities come to us, you know, that we meet them with peace, that we can actually acquire wisdom and power. But I guess since that's the law of Osir, that's high up on that's high up on the tree. So it takes, have reached at least the ab division of your spirit to even be able to take that approach to life, or to be able to for that to be more than just a concept to you. You actually have to have experienced some initiation or something. It can't just be just that intellectual knowledge. And I know we only have about a minute left or so, but could you just talk about, if you can, just for a moment, just the need for people to understand that it's going to take more than just an intellectual understanding of these concepts in order to evolve. It's going to actually take the work. It's going to actually take you actually taming the animal, putting the animal on the leash, as you say.
Well, a good example would be you can study intellectually how to swim. You can read a book on swimming. You can watch Mark Spitz, or who's the latest cat?
Right.
What's that guy's name?
I remember Mark. I don't know the new guy. I remember Mark.
But you can watch them in the pool. and in Olympics, whatever. But until you actually get in the water and learn the techniques, practice the techniques, you're not going to be able to swim. So that's what life is. Life is seeing what needs to happen, identifying where you need to go, identifying what's true, and then exercising that knowledge. And that's what gives us the ability then to move beyond the animal to the human and the human to the divine.
Everybody, I just want to encourage you to go back and listen to this show 3 more times. I mean, because each time Orwa comes on, he is, you know, giving us nuggets. And again, this is just information that's condensed, you know, into an hour show. Okay, so I mean, I just want you to go back. You got to go and sit with this information, listen to it again, share the information. Please go back and listen to the prior shows on the 7 divisions of the spirit. The overview is very important. And, of course, the part 2 and part 3 are also equally important. You have to bring yourself up to where we are now. Let me make sure that I mention this. There's going to be a workshop at the Synbeb Wellness Complex, and that's tomorrow. It's on preparing for and understanding the fall equinox. And that's going to be, again, at the Synbeb Wellness Complex in Washington, D.C., if you're in the area. That's at 6224 3rd Street, and that's Northwest Washington. In case you need to MapQuest it, the zip code there is 20011. That's going to be starting at 3 p.m. to about 5:30. And, again, that's at the Synbeb Wellness Complex at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest Washington. The zip again is 20011. If you'd like more information, please call 202-723-5566. Again, that's 202-723-5566. I encourage you to get there early. Again, starts at 3 p.m. Get there early. Make sure you can get a seat. Please, no children, okay? There may be a meditation going on or whatever. You don't want, you know, your children to, you know, disrupt the class. You know, children get restless after sitting for a while. So please, no children. And, again, get ready and prepare for the fall equinox. You definitely want to know what it's all about, what dietary regimen is going to be taking place concerning this time. So definitely get out to that workshop tomorrow and enjoy the information that you're going to get there tomorrow. Brother Orwa, this information is so powerful, my brother. Again, just in this hour, it seems like it's been 2 hours just simply because of the information is just, it's so, you know, it's just information that if you wanted to ever understand about comedic philosophy, comedic spirituality, then I also want to recommend another radio broadcast, okay? It's the Tawi Blog Talk radio show. That's T like Tom A U I Radio Blog Talk radio show, okay? You want to check that out as well. Hosted by Shechem Shechem Ra'un Nefer Amen. Definitely, if you are enjoying this, you're definitely going to enjoy that as well. So that's Tawi, T-A-U-I, Blog Talk Radio, and get fed some more. So, Brother Orwa, I want to thank you again for your time. This information is so powerful, and again, I just want to, you know, really, really thank you for all of the work that you've done over the years, the decades that you've been teaching and sharing and helping to uplift the community, and, you know, what a wonderful guess you always are, and I appreciate your presence tonight. Thank you. Any parting words for our listeners?
Yeah, and again, for people who live around this point, if you have in-depth knowledge on this whole concept issue, you know, check out the Magnetaire series, Magnetaire 1 through 7, which goes far more in-depth than we can cover in an hour. On the spirit, in the spirit, etc.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Brother Orwell, before you go, last week you know, I'm sure that there are people that wanted to know more about this. You touched on, when we were talking in the show last week, you mentioned as we got into the discussion about the radiation that, you know, coming from cell phones and how people are being affected by it. We touched upon Reginald Lewis, how back in the day, how he just, you know, everybody who knows that story, you know, knows that this radiation, even as advanced as cell phones have become since then, you know, people are still dealing with these. And you mentioned bags that you had, and that, you know, I mean, and I actually had an opportunity to see some of them actually at the Sinbad Wellness Complex, and they are very nice. Everybody, if you're in the area, as a matter of fact, even if you're not in the area, if you're in Baltimore, you need to drive down to the Sinbad Wellness Complex. And Brother Orwell, can you talk about those bags briefly? Just again, what they are, and you know, their function.
Well, basically, they're bags. They're made. They're leather bags, also some cloth bags, which are made in Ghana. But the difference is, so we have Kemetic symbols and African symbols, et cetera. But the real value, true value, beyond the symbolism of craftsmanship and the role it plays in terms of helping the economy of African people, is that they also align with this fabric which shields from radiation, from cell phones. The cell phones, et cetera. It also shields from people being able to scan your credit card. You know, mm-hmm. You mentioned that people, their devices, someone can ride down the street, your street right now, and just ride down your street and just capture your information from your cell phone. Well, if you have from your credit card. But if you have your credit card in one of these bags, you're protected, you're shielded. As a matter of fact, there was a news report. A friend of mine who had just retired from the police department told me that there's a news report where, and the newscast, they were telling people they should keep their credit cards in aluminum foil while they're at home, right, period, because, you know, the metal blocks the ability to scan. Well, the fabric is lined with nickel, cobalt, and silver, which is the metal that shields from the radio frequencies.
Wow. So everybody, again, you need to, if you're just hearing this for the first time and you haven't been by Sinbad in a while, you go by there, make it a point. Matter of fact, everybody that's going to the workshop tomorrow, you need to stop in and ask about these bags. I mean, they're beautiful. Like Orwell said, the craftsmanship is awesome. But beyond that, there's even a much larger picture here. And, you know, you can actually benefit from these bags. And again, once you see them, you're going to be like, they're going to capture your attention just once you see them. Okay, but now you know when you see them what they are and their purpose, then it's going to appeal to you even that much more. Again, everybody, don't forget the workshop tomorrow starting at 3:00. It's preparing for and understanding the fall equinox. And that's at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest Washington. Get there early. For more information, call 202-723-5566. Brother Orwell, I really appreciate it, my brother. Thank you so much for your time. We'll try to get you back next Friday if possible, and we can continue the discussion on the seven divisions of the spirit, my brother. Anetarach to you.
Brother, Anetarach, wow. Thanks for your opportunity.
Thank you. I appreciate your time, my brother. Everybody, that is Orwell Hehi Metro Ryan comment. I knew that you were going to, and I know that you agree with me. So I want to encourage everybody again, go back and listen to the show again and again and share it. I can't emphasize that enough. This information is a meal. It's not just for you, though. You know, we're trying to make the world a better place, not just for yourself, but for your children, for your children's children, and your loved ones as well. As, well, I was going to say your enemies, but no such thing, right? You do understand that, right? Nothing and no one in the world can be against you. All experiences come to you for your reclamation of peace, that you may acquire wisdom and power. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Thank you for the people who have shared the link. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Tuau. My name is Juwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you?